Meet masterful historic gardener and Monticello's curator of plants, Peggy Cornett. I first met Peggy over a decade ago when the two of us roared all over the state together recording the story of the endangered Rosa Muscata, or Old Musk Rose, for an NPR story. Peggy Cornett, it seemed to me, knew of every 19th and early 20th century garden in the universe, and also about every plant they contained. Gardens, Peggy says, are where she feels at home. And she dates that feeling back to watching her mother dive into gardening after her older brother was killed in Vietnam.
In the garden of life, here we belong, we've got to be strong. In the garden.
And I think that really inspired me. Watching how she dealt with grief in that way. So gardening has many levels. It's just part of me. And so when I went to college, I wanted to major in horticulture, but I also wanted to go to UNC Chapel Hill in North Carolina. So
why?
I ended up, it just seemed cooler. I don't know. And
I
actually double majored in botany and English. And I really enjoyed my college years. Studying botany, I just had so many seminal moments of being out in nature and suddenly realizing I knew the names of every plant that was around me. You know,
and why was that important?
I don't know. I just felt at home, I think. And it was also great because I was an undergraduate as a botany major, but there were only 5 botany majors, and the rest were graduate students. And so most of my classes were with graduate students, which also raised the level of my learning and, you know, challenged me more.
You got pushed.
Yes. My first job out of college, I was quite lucky to get a job as the gardener and interpreter at Old Salem in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Now, wait a minute. Back up just a little bit. You're majoring in botany.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of that was hands-on, actually working with plants?
Okay. Well, it's interesting because I had an advisor, Clifford Parks, and he really had a horticulture background. And I explained to him that horticulture was really something I wanted to have more of a focus on.
Is that the actual growing of plants?
Yes, that's okay. Right. You know, understanding, you know, greenhouse maintenance and everything. So he actually hired me as a work study student to take care of, he did camellia studies. So I would take data on the camellias in his collection, and I'd have to collect the flowers, measure each petal, smell them, you know, do all these different things. And it was wonderful because a lot of them would bloom over the wintertime, and they were in a greenhouse. And so I started out kind of doing horticulture-type things. And then I also just focused my studies on practical kind of learning, not just the scientific botanical end of things. Plus my background as a gardener with my mother. You know, I still carry on so many of her wisdoms that she passed on to me.
Such as?
Oh, gosh. Well, she would put mineral oil in the tips of the ears of corn to keep corn earworms away. So it was kind of an organic method of preventing corn earworms at the tip of corn. And she was a bit of a vernacular gardener, so her garden was quite amusing to look at. I mean, she had pie pans tied up with string to knock around and keep blue jays out of the garden. She wasn't exactly an organic gardener, but she taught me a lot about how to weed, you know, to be efficient at those kind of tasks and to actually enjoy it after a while. I didn't at first. It was quite dreadful to go out and weed her peanuts. And
do you have any words about weeding efficiently that I could use?
Just thoroughness. Every little thing coming up is going to grow bigger. So don't even leave the ones that are just coming out of the ground. And then, of course, how to save seeds. She preserved beans that dated back in our family generations, going back to Kentucky. And, you know, when she cooked beans, they had some kind of bacon or some kind of seasoning, you might say, a fatback of some sort that really made them good because they were just big beans, but the pods were tender. So they had a meatiness to them. They weren't like these little thin things you get the French cut, you know, nothing. Oh, she abhorred those.
Bean.
Yeah, it was a beans bean, you know.
A man who plants a garden is a very happy man.
Peggy Cornett's first job out of college was as a costumed interpreter and gardener at Old Salem in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
What was your costume?
Oh, it was a long dress and a scarf around and a bonnet because I was portraying a 19th century Moravian gardener. The blacksmiths there made these authentic-looking hoes. Anyone who wandered into this herb garden where I was working, I would just stop and talk to them and everything. But I would get quite hot, so I was always kind of tucking the scarf that was supposed to cover my neck, kind of tuck it up under this top I wore. It was a hot outfit, but, you know, it's really a seasonal position. But then I was hired full-time to be assistant to the horticulturist. So I actually got to wear a groundsman's uniform with brown pants and
no
kind
scarf.
Of a khaki shirt that had, I don't think it had my name on it, but maybe it did. And I ended up moving on and becoming the head gardener for an estate garden in Winston-Salem, the estate of DeWitt Haynes. And she was the matriarch of the Haynes Company.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And her garden was built in the 1920s, and it had been designed by a famous landscape architect, Ellen Biddle Shipman. And it was built at the height of the Depression. And so DeWitt was elderly at the time, and I was sort of hired to be not only her gardener, but also company for her because she loved to garden, and I would make flower arrangements for her breakfast tray every day. And, you know, yeah, I lived on the property in her garage apartment, and it was a four-car garage, by the way. So it wasn't a little apartment. It was very nice. And I looked down over this beautiful greenhouse. And when the garden was first built, I think she had a staff of 20 estate managers and gardeners.
What was the garden like?
It was really a perennial garden with borders, formal. There were a lot of topiaries, topiary roses that I had to take care of that were quite challenging, and topiary wisteria.
Must be very
beautiful.
Challenging.
Yes, and took a lot of maintenance. And a beautiful water feature, a little pond with slate edging, and it had a wisteria that was trained to cascade over this little pond in the garden. And then she also had a cut flower garden and two greenhouses for cut flowers.
Yeah. You said it was an aging garden.
Yes.
What does that mean in terms of garden health or garden history?
Well, some things were overgrown. Parts of her border used to be very intensively planted with bulbs and perennials, and because as she aged, it was scaled down. There wasn't the diversity of flowers and perennials in the beds. And there were areas that were just overgrown. I mean, you know, there was even an area where kudzu was infiltrating the forest.
The curse of North
Carolina. That's exactly right.
It's my job to be cleaning up this mess, and that's enough reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest, and that makes a day for me.
How was the job?
I really liked it. I did it for a couple of years, but I started getting interested in going back to school. And I heard about a program at Longwood Gardens in Pennsylvania, a graduate program that was a fellowship program. So it was a scholarship, basically. And I applied for this program, and it was a kind of an intensive, rigorous application process, and you had to go up for this grueling interview. I'd never done anything like it. This round table with all of these people.
And you.
And me asking questions. I mean, it was quite nerve-wracking. But somehow I got into this program, and it was really opened up the whole world to me. I mean,
what world?
Well, of gardening. You were exposed to all aspects of botanical gardens and garden management and museum studies. You took courses at the University of Delaware, so you got a master's degree from the university, and then you also did practical things on site at Longwood. So it was not just hands-on horticulture, but also managing botanic gardens. The program really produces people who are directors of botanical gardens today, and that just didn't appeal to me. I wanted to still be more hands-on. And because of my background at Old Salem, my interest was in historic gardens and historic plants because of the Moravians. Going back to my first job, the Moravians were incredible record keepers, and the gardens there were really restored in a way to be exactly as the way the Moravians had them. They did a great deal of effort to find the correct species of plants and to do the exact same design as the original gardens. And this was all based on primary documentation as well as archaeology. So that's how I got interested in the whole field of historic gardening.
Now, why? Because plenty of us have summer jobs. Okay, I hate to think of, I make a career out of some of the summer jobs I had. And here you are sweating in your kerchief. And this becomes your focus.
That's true. It was a moment that, like a crossroads moment, I guess. I could have gone one way or the other. And because I did have interest in tropical plants and modern cultivars and things. But I think just the gardens at Old Salem seemed to reflect more of what I was all about, dating back to my childhood again.
Out of Peggy Cornett's master's thesis came a book, Popular Annuals of Eastern North America, 1865 to 1914, published by no less than Dumbarton Oaks. What were some popular annuals from the late 19th and early 20th century?
I selected some, and I followed their history from 1865 to 1914, because mm-hmm. some of them really went through a lot of changes during that time period.
In the flower itself.
The way they were developed, yes. Okay. For example, zinnias. In 1865, the first double zinnia was introduced, and everyone went crazy over it. Up until that time, it was a single flower, dull, pinkish purple. People thought it was quite bland and unattractive. They even called it the old medicine hat, you know. Dwarf plants started to come in because it's at the height of the Victorian era when bedding out planting designs were all the rage, and, you know, they wanted to have uniform plants that would conform to planting in masses that you could shape into designs in the garden. I mean, if you know, it's the Smithsonian. They reproduced one of these wonderful Victorian-style gardens to show people what, and they were intensively garden. I mean, it really showed the emergence of the American middle class because people had time to focus on cultivating annuals that required a lot of attention. We weren't so concerned on self-sufficiency anymore. And I studied some of the California native plants that were being introduced at that time, like the California poppy. And so I wrote this thesis, and I spent a lot of time in libraries studying old catalogs. These catalogs were telling the story of the westward movement, and it was a romanticized story, and these flowers played right into it in catalog. These catalogs were, you know, they weren't just pictures of flowers and descriptions of flowers. They had long articles in them as well, and I just really was captivated by the whole time period. And so I followed a lot of those flowers, and marigolds, all of these other flowers that are very common today, were really being developed.
No kidding.
And hybridized during that time.
Then, after working a stint among the tropical flowers and live oaks of Louisiana's Oak Alley Plantation, Peggy Cornett fetched up at Monticello.
So I took care of the greenhouses. I grew plants that were planted out in the gardens later, both the vegetables and flowers. My boss liked to call me a straw boss. I was over the gardeners, but I'd also work with the gardeners. And then I also started garden tours, so I had to develop a garden tour, you know, the content of the tour, and hire a staff and train them and supervise them.
You mean to talk about Mr. Jefferson's
yes.
vegetables?
Yeah, they take people on a guided tour that took about 45 to 50 minutes. And that program is still going on today. There are 8 tours a day are given from spring through the end of October, and now there are about 25 garden guides.
In the actual gardens there, do you have some stories you can pull out of plants that you loved or things that you did or just incidents?
Well, when I first started working, I was pretty gung-ho about making sure that we saved seed of the old varieties in the garden, because the year prior to starting there, apparently they had grown this heirloom variety of lettuce called tennis ball lettuce, and the staff and the director of Monticello loved the lettuce so much that they ate all of the lettuce and they didn't allow plants to go to seed. So when I wanted to make sure we allowed these plants to go to seed, but then
do not eat that plant.
Yeah, you can't eat. You got to let the ugly lettuce, you know, start flowering. And but also peas and beans. And so I guess, you know, one time I pulled up a patch of peas. Actually, it wasn't too premature, but my boss was concerned that I had done that too early. But I was able to dry them on, and we did get a good pet. But I was at that time, I was just mortified that I was being chastised for pulling up these peas. Jefferson loved English peas, and that was considered his favorite vegetable. And he had a contest to see who could bring peas to the table first. And we were always looking for the variety. So we started getting involved with Seed Savers Exchange.
You mean
and
the pea?
Different peas. Well, he grew, you know, like three different peas, but we were always looking for one. And we were able to track down the Blue Prussian pea, or Prussian Blue, as he called it. And Prince Albert pea was one of our first heirlooms. It's related to a pea he grew. And when we were able to track down the marrow fat pea. So these were just fun discoveries. It's always a... there's always something that we're still looking for.
Peas, eating goober peas. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas.
You'll find links to Peggy Cornett's book, as well as to this Saturday's Heritage Harvest Festival at Monticello, in which she is an enthusiastic participant, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Back after a break with Kathleen Overfield Zook of the Bloom Trio.
War is over, went free from rags and fleas. We'll kiss our wives and sweethearts, and then we'll gobble goober peas.